Show me prison. Show me jail. Show me prison man whose face is growing pale. And I'll show you, young man, with many reasons why. Are there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me an alley, show me train, show me a hobo who sleeps out in the rain, and I'll show you, young man, with many reasons why. Are there but for fortune may go you or I. Show me the whiskey stains on the floor. Show me drunken man as he stumbles out the door. And I'll show you, young man, with many reasons why. Are there but for fortune may go you or I. Country where the bombs had to fall. Show me the ruins of the building once so tall. And I'll show you, young land, with so many reasons why. And there but for fortune may go you.
Of all the songs in a way, Phil Oakes, whose voice you just heard, who had been here so excellently too and thrillingly in his own way at the Earl of Oldtown. Phil has recorded so many songs, written so many, and with him is his colleague and our friend Bob Gibson. And I'm thinking that song you just sang is almost, if I were to find a theme for all the songs you write and sing, that would almost be it, wouldn't it? The opposing phony self-righteousness that is there all the time in the name of what, law and order or something.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. It's, in a way, almost all the songs have that undercurrent, don't they?
Yeah, they're all a bit social theme, pretty much.
And then, since the time you first started singing, where would it begin? Wait, before A Small Circle of Friends, before Crucifixion, early songs, what's happened, Bob, come anytime you feel like, to singing, folk music, and the writing of it. During the 60s, there were the 50s, the silent generation, 60s, active, and 70s, what?
Well, I think, well, at the moment, in this time period, I think we're coming out of a kind of a deep sleep with the breaking of the Watergate scandal. I think, you know, there was tremendous activism in the 60s. Which was effectively blocked, I think, by the two administrations, Johnson and Nixon. I think what Nixon was about, of course, was the sowing of the creation of a total police state, step by step, the repression on the press and on individuals, on the destruction of the Supreme Court. I mean, just step by step, taking away all the advances that have been made. And but he got too arrogant, went too far, and it exploded with Watergate. And at that point, people had stopped being activists, had developed a sense of despair, frustration, and mainly impotence, I guess, and had, you know, so had, I guess, become very self-involved with either going to the countryside or drugs or self-examination, yoga gurus, what have you. Come in, Rennie Davis, and that whole situation. But I repeat that I think that the extent of the scandal is so widespread that they can't.
How's this? Is there a way? Perhaps you can maybe through some. Be interesting. I think, Bob. What do you think, if Phil? And with you chiming in whenever you feel like, Phil. Maybe starting from the beginning. What's happened to Phil Oakes? Maybe through his songs, the changes that have occurred leading up to now. What do you think? Just an idea that I have.
I think it's interesting that I really feel like that
Have the times caught up to Phil's songs, or Phil's songs caught up with the times?
I don't know.
After a hiatus, after Phil's hiatus, which I, you know, personally to me and a lot of my friends, we're very, you know, we're glad to hear you sing again, Phil, really.
Well, then, of course, Phil's story is not to remove from your story, Bob's, too. I mean, both of you, you know, very much alive to the times and to yourselves, and each of you, no doubt, going for your own crucible, you know. And how you've been affected. Why don't you go back to the beginnings? I first met Bob in the 50s, and you were in the 50s, and you... What were you singing? What's a song? This might even be historical.
I'm trying to remember. What were you singing? I first met you in Cleveland.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wasn't singing in the 50s at all.
In the 60s.
So, I mean, I
in the 60s.
I started, you know, at Ohio State with Jim Glover, Jim and Gene, who was my roommate and taught me how to... my first chords. We used to sing together.
Jim and Gene, who did your Crucifixion.
Right. Yeah. And one of the first jobs I got was right after I started in 1961, was in Farragher's, or the Dalton Boys Saloon.
What were you singing?
Up in Cleveland. At that point, I was sort of halfway, I was doing some Kingston Trio kind of songs, and I was writing my very first topical songs. I mean, I had a song about Billy Saul Estes. Remember the Texas?
Could you give an example of just
but they're very light topic. I don't even remember them anymore.
That's all right. It's just fragments.
Songs like, you know, Billy Saul Estes was a Texas millionaire that got caught in a scandal and had to go to jail. Something to do with fertilizer, I believe. He just got out and he's now a religious convert. And but this was a song about the government attitude about a guy caught and how they dropped him. Something like this. Stand tall, Billy Saul, we don't know you at all. Take down those pictures from the wall. Well, we don't want to handle an agriculture scandal. We have got to face elections in the fall. And at the last, had a good last verse about da 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 da. Da 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 da. If you want to make some money or something, well, you can always rent the U.S. government. It's the best one that money can buy. Stand tall, Billy Saul. Da, da. You know, that kind of stuff.
And they laid Jesse James in his grave.
Yeah, right.
It was Jesse James, right. Which is not accidental. That's interesting. So, in the early '60s, you're singing about a political scandal. It's very funny.
Yeah, that's one of the
here
first
in
songs
Watergate
I wrote.
Time, you recall it now. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I was like writing. I mean, the very first song I wrote was about the Cuban invasion. I learned a few chords. I mean, I learned like an E minor and an A minor, There's a song. The first song is the Ballad of the Cuban Invasion, which is something like this. A thousand went to take the island. That chance as strong as broken twig. A thousand stayed there at the island. Met their fate at the bay. They were told when they arrived. The island would come to their aid. They found out those who survived. There was no hope, they were betrayed. That was the first song, yeah. Actually.
You know what occurs to me as we're talking now and Phil is singing, Bob, that in a way, perhaps through Phil's songs, even though they're fragmentary recollection of some he wrote, we get sort of a history, the development of the times, and the young, your contemporaries, you know.
It just struck me that if the first song you wrote was about the Bay of Pigs, you know, we're really not so far from that with the present, with the present scandals.
Yeah.
You're sort of the minstrel of the loyal opposition, Phil.
Well, we're not unrelated, that's the point. See,
yes.
The Bay of Pigs, Watergate, everything led to Watergate, isn't it? Everything. In the name of... national security.
National insecurity, yeah.
Go ahead, Phil. It's your role.
Well, you know, like I always say that Bob Gibson had a big influence on me. He never seems to figure out what it is, but, you know, it's a kind of sort of the bouncy kind of music with a little, you know, a certain kind of chord structure. And I'll just sing a, like, I mean, hearing you sing all, you know, good and greasy and I mean, Bob's you went to Farragher's in summer 61.
This, I take it, is a coffee house where in Columbus?
Yeah, well, no, it's a bar in Cleveland,
yeah,
actually. Cleveland.
And, Bill Malloy and that bunch used to be around here, New Orleans.
Yeah,
singers.
And they brought the whole bunch of people through that particular summer. The Smothers Brothers came, Judy Hensky, Knob Looked Up for 10,000, just everybody came through that particular, and I was opening act for all those people, so it was really a fantastic, you know, experience as a performer, because I literally had been playing the guitar for a couple of months and doing those little ditties, but like, just, I think it was a kind of music that, and then Bob gave me this melody. I don't know, remember the words, maybe we can do a bit of One More Parade. Bob gave me a tape of for melodies.
Sing it with him.
Yeah.
Sure, a couple of which I still perform. And one of them is this one, the One More Parade.
Not sure I remember, we'll try it.
Up, two, three, four, marching down the street to the rolling of the guns and the tramping of the feet. The general salutes while the widows wave and weep. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid. Price is paid. Stop the parade.
That's for the chorus.
So young, so strong, so ready for the war.
Then what?
So D minor. So willing to go. Another shore.
Then it's some crazy chorus.
All march together.
What chord?
Yep.
Bob, take a whack at it.
Okay. Let's start this again.
So we shift the guitar around from Oaks to Gibson, and we continue.
So young, so strong, so ready for the war, so willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same, so there is no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, one in line of flame. Start the parade. Cold hard stares on faces so proud. Kisses from the girls and cheers from the crowd. While the widows from the last war crying in their shrouds. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid. The price is paid. Start the parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war, so willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together and everybody looks the same, so there is no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, when we light the flame, so start the parade.
Do you remember another verse? Not really. Do part of the other one.
Two, three, four, marching down the street to the rolling of the drums and the tramping of the feet. General salutes while the widows wave and weep. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid. The price is paid. So start the parade.
I do part of the other one. I just heard this dom dom. That's the first thing I heard. And then all the good times come. It's the other song that came out of that.
If you say that all the good times are gone, if you say this rain will keep raining on, I walk along with my head held high. I'll find a song and I'll sing it to the sky. I may be wrong, but I'll live until I die. That's the way it's gonna be. Wait and see. Even though you say the devil knocks at my door, though you say my ship will not reach the shore, I've got a will and a thousand ways. I got a dream of a thousand better days. I got a smile that just stays and stays. That's the way it's gonna be. Wait and see. Even though you say the tides are all running low, though you say ship will not reach the shore, detour is waiting for me round the bend, but I won't stay down on the count of ten. Said it before and I'll say it again. That's the way it's gonna be. Wait and see. Just you wait and see.
When did you sing those? I remember you at the Gate of Horn. The time Gate of Horn was in the basement of the Rice Hotel. So we're talking about early 60s?
61 or 2?
Yeah, we came in the tape in 61 or 2. Yeah.
So at 61, 62, we're just finding out about, we're just getting more and more deeply involved in Vietnam. Martin Luther King was alive. And then we're talking about a certain period, aren't we, and the songs that were coming out of it.
Yeah. Well, see, at that point, I mean, I don't remember now, but I was writing songs about Vietnam, you know, before there was any peace movement. I mean, like the first songs were about Vietnam about 1962 and 63, yeah, even when Kennedy was still around. And I don't even remember that. I mean, it's talking Vietnam. You sure have it in the library, but I don't remember it. But it's interesting historically about, you know, the prediction of really what was going on. And then, you know, and of course, I ain't marching anymore. I mean, that.
What try ain't marching anymore? It seems so long ago, and yet.
And that's about 1964, that one. So I'll just do a bit of that. So, at this point, I'd moved to New York City. I was living in the Village, living near the corner of Bleecker McDougal. And this song came out one night. I'll do the first and last verse. Oh, I marched to the Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British war. Young land started growing, young blood started flowing, but I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leaders screaming when they close the missile plant. The United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't marching anymore.
So that was also a song that was sung by the young throughout the country, campuses. I'm thinking of that period, the fervor, the despair and the fervor at the same time, 62, 63.
That to me was the healthiest period. I mean, say 62 to like 65. It was before drugs came in on a mass level, you know, before acid. The movement, there was the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement were merging on a very clear and intellectual level, and I think we're starting to pose a real threat. I mean, a very sober threat to what was going on in this country, and you know, around that, or like 1965, you had the first SDS march in Washington with I.F. Stone and Carl Oglesby and those people. It was about 20,000 people, I think, at that first march. And it was, you know, this is a very high level of the.
What were you singing? Was it the Power and the Glory then?
Well, I was singing the Power and the Glory, and I ain't marching anymore. And I just written like Love Me, I'm a Liberal, which was an attack on liberalism. Yeah. And I.F. Stone got furious at the song and said, I got to say, that's a some of my best friends are liberals.
Yeah.
And it's terrible that this young man is attacking some people I really, really like, uh-huh. You know. And it's that's that kind of attitude that's going to ruin the movement, he said. And it was a great, you know, swing. It was a great time. You know, SNCC was strong, and all those things were going on.
Freedom Summer. Could you take, well, you know, Power and the Glory in a way, kind of. I know the words are ironic, but I'm thinking of the actual melody. Want to take a whack at that?
I'll do a verse of that one.
All right.
See, another thing from old Gibson here. I wouldn't have written that without.
He's a role.
I mean, he played a definite musical influence. Come on and take a walk with me through this green and growing land. Walk through the meadows and the mountains and the sand. Walk through the valleys and the rivers and the plains. Walk through the sun and walk through the rain. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. Oh, her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom, that her glory shall rest on us all. Yet she's only as rich as the poorest of the poor, only as free as a padlocked prison door, only as strong as our love for this land, only as tall as we stand. For here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. All her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom, that her glory shall rest on us all.
Bob, hearing again the fervor of it, the optimism of the song, reflecting that time.
Yeah.
Then something happened. Many things happened. There was a turning inward, and you mentioned drugs.
Yeah, well, see, into that picture came the Tim Leary and acid, the glamorization of acid, mass drug taking without, you know, any kind of intelligence involved, and then lower quality mass drug taking, you know, which was like a celebration and then an uplift at first, and then a huge downer after, like all releases of energy. And I more and more suspect that there was a conscious, that drugs were introduced somewhat consciously into this country, almost in the way that drugs were introduced into China, you know, in the 19th century, in terms of weakening resistance to a reactionary force. That's my hunch at this point. But still, you know, the movement grew and grew, and then of course then came Chicago '68, where it culminated with the crisis in the Democratic Party, the Johnson policies, you know, were in direct contradiction with a growing movement, and they clashed in Chicago and the Chicago trial and so forth, and then of course followed by Kent State. And after Kent State and the Nixon repression getting stronger and stronger, and the historical divisiveness in the left that always happens anyway, throw that in for.
The reason you say that, I'm thinking also musically. Bob, you gonna say something?
No.
Oh, I think musically, what happened to you? Because I think you're in a sense symbolic of it, Phil Oakes, your songs always being topical in nature, of a more than topical, of the impulse of a time, you see. And so what happened, so we go back to the moment on the turning inward and drug taking lesson, then you, another song, other kind of song.
So of course I mellowed out and took a little edge off my harshness and got soft with stuff like
millionaires and paupers walk the hungry street, rich and poor companions of the restless feet. Strangers in a foreign land strike a match with a trembling hand, learn too much to ever understand. But nobody's buying flowers from the flower lady.
But see, what I did the Pleasures of the Harbor record, which was, you know, the most general one I've done, but still with it went from political to sociological and songs like The Crucifixion.
Small Circle of Friends, and that cynical one.
Try small. Can you try Small Circle of Friends?
There's a verse of that.
This had sort of a cynical quality to it.
Oh, look outside the window. There's a woman being grabbed. They've dragged her to the bushes, and now she's being stabbed. Maybe we should call the cops and try to stop the pain. But Monopoly is so much fun, I'd hate to blow the game. And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends.
Well, you can do more if you want.
Well, I want to cover some of the material.
Right.
And I was like wavering back and forth, like between politics and lyricism, I guess you'd say, or I'm still doing the songs like that and stuff like I'm still writing about the war, like Oh, the comic and the beauty queen are dancing on the stage. Raw recruits are lining up like coffins in a cage. Oh, we're fighting in a war we lost before the war began. We're the white boots marching in a yellow land. And then after Chicago, musically, I wrote an album about the death of the American called Rehearsals for Retirement, where it was like a song cycle of, you know, the sort of like the death of the liberal American, and ending with this song, and there's a poem on the back of the album saying, just sort of describes the emotional changes that we went through as a concerned American, saying, and sort of feeling that the American rule was over, the American day was over, and at the end of these last days, these trials and tragedies were, after all, only our rehearsals for retirement. And that's, and describing the decade as a rehearsals for retirement. And with lines and something like this. This is a piano song, but let's see if I can do it this way. The days grew longer for smaller prizes. I feel a stranger to all surprises. You can have them, I don't want them. I wear a different kind of garment in my rehearsals for retirement. Where are the armies who killed a country and turned a strong man into a baby? Now comes the rabble, they are welcome. I wait in anger and amusement in my rehearsals for retirement. Like that kind of despair music.
Isn't that funny how the songs, even was your style and your style of singing affected too, as well as the content of the songs?
Well, you know, I wasn't much of a singer when in the early days. I was too jerky, too young, speeded up, you know, and I didn't hit. I sang everything too quickly. I mean, the first record is like, you know, should be played at a slower speed, and. Yeah, but I started to sing about the time of the third Elektra record at all, and then I got into, you know, my voice matured. I hope to re-record some of those early songs.
Let's take a slight pause for a moment. Phil Oakes is my guest, as well as Bob Gibson here, and in a way, through Phil's, who was influenced a great deal by Bob, Phil's own growth, and it is growth, from beginnings of a certain, the 60s, the 70s, changes in the young, on the campus, off the campus, the fervor, the despair, and perhaps now something else. We'll ask about that in a moment and hear more of his songs, and a contemporary one too, in a moment after the slight pause.
Okay, that's Studs Terkel doing the pausing. That's a tape of 1973 in May with Studs interviewing Phil Oakes and Bob Gibson in Chicago. And this is Ed Pearl with Up From the Ash Grove on KPFK Los Angeles. And this evening we're dedicating our program to Phil, who died approximately 5 years ago. And we'll be speaking with his brother Michael after the second half of this tape and listening to some very fine music, some of which you probably haven't heard before. I know you haven't heard before. So back to the tape of 1973, Studs Terkel and Phil Oakes.
Resuming the conversation with Phil Oakes, and whenever Bob is in the mood to, Bob Gibson. Were you saying, so we left you, how'd they go in soap operas? When last we left Ma Perkins, there she was. So we left you last, it was a moment of despair, and following Kent State around there, and beginnings of something even harsher occurring. And so, what about Crucifixion? When did you write Crucifixion?
Well, I wrote that. I was in England. You know, I was my first trip to England in '65, and it was after the Kennedy assassination. And I was just doing a lot of singing, and I wrote Crucifixion driving in a truck from Manchester to London in about 2 hours. It's just I don't know where the songs come from. They just come out of my subconscious.
That's an interesting point. Perhaps you and Bob could both discuss that. How a song, here's Crucifixion, which is a powerful one. This is one of those I'd love to have new if you can. I know it's an 8-minute piece. You say it came, you did it in 2 hours on a truck trip from London to Manchester.
Yeah, Manchester to London, right.
How does it, Bob, any of your songs, too, what happens? This is one of those ridiculous questions, I know.
They just are there. They just come right out. It's as if you knew them. It's interesting. I always, occasionally when I write a tune to somebody else's words, you know, I've tried to explain it. It's when I see the words, I know the tune. I know the tune as if it existed. And it just, that is the tune that I know to go with those words, though a tune has never existed before. And it's with the words. It's very easy when, the few times that I've written words and music, you know, I blocked up in that area a long time ago. Now I'm content to just write a tune now and then and hope somebody will put some words to it.
In your case, Phil, an event happened, a tragic event, a traumatic event, and you were thinking about something else from that.
But I just have no idea, you know, where a song comes from.
But you were in London, though. I mean, you were in England.
I was in England, and very actively singing, and the songs came out. They just, you talk about things, and you discuss the assassination, and read about it, you know, and all these things, and then you go see a movie, and then you meet a girl, and then you get drunk, and you do this, and you go to Toronto, and, you know, and that, somehow out of all that, you know, so comes a subconscious process, you know, that, I mean, it could be, I mean, like Small Circle of Friends, for example, came out of a chance remark. I was late at night in a coffee house, sitting there drinking real late, and somebody said, talking to this Canadian guy, and he said, I said, dot, you know, and he said, oh, I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. I said, what'd you say? And yeah. I picked up the guitar, and zoom, you know, the chord came right away, and I said, that's a song, here's the chords. And from there, it's just a matter of writing the verses.
Yeah, wouldn't it? And that phrase.
But it's just that, I mean, you just hear it, you know, or you grab it, or, you know, wherever it comes from.
It also was a certain time you heard that, too. See, a small circle of friends, and then you start thinking about, oh, well, I'll look out for Jack. I'll look out for number one. At that time of cynicism, you know.
Yeah.
And me and my small circle of friends. So it's the time you're feeling, plus a phrase that may turn it on. Well, the reason I like Crucifixion very much, I hope you can take a whack at it, is that it's something that Joan Little, the Birch Director, once said, interpretation of Christ. She says, people think of Christ and the disciples as serious and very sober. She considered them, her interpretation, as a dancing people, a joyful people. So you have the phrase, dance, dance. Could you, is that asking too much?
Well, for the purposes of this resume, I'll just do part of it. Images of innocence charge him to go on, but the decadence of destiny is looking for a pawn. To a nightmare of knowledge, he opens up the gate, and a blinding revelation is laid upon his plate. That beneath the greatest love is a hurricane of hate, and God help the critic of the dawn. So dance, 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 teach us to be true. Come dance, 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 cause we love you. I mean, just a study of the process of I mean, like in ancient times, where they'd sacrifice, a healthy member of the community, you know, a young male in his prime. Some societies would, as a sacrifice to the gods, and in a way, you know, leaving out the political implications, that the Kennedy assassination, in a way, was destroying our best in some kind of ritual. Kind of thing. I mean, people say that they really love the reformer, they love the radical, but they simply want to see him killed. you know, a certain part of the human psyche.
So that song
the,
on
the
that,
dark side of the human psyche is what the song's about.
Continuing the saga of Phil Oakes, the musical saga, and the psyche saga of Phil Oakes, we come to the end of the 60s. Now it's Nixon's president.
Yeah, and what happened to me, I mean, I guess, is my withdrawal was, I mean, I moved to California in 1967, and that's where Pleasures of the Harbor tape from California rehearsals and Greatest Hits came out of. And so I was just sitting around California, having a good time, getting a little stagnant. And at that point, I mean, having gone through almost 10 years of, or 9 years of singing, as a political singer, I had a kind of reaction to it. And combination, I mean, I had a reaction, first of all, against the counterculture. I thought, well, in order for there to be a real viable movement, there has to be the idea of a freak counterculture was disastrous. I mean, what was needed was an organic connection to the working class. I mean, that's what George Wallace meant. That's what even Robert Kennedy meant. You know, that you had to had to be one country. Had to be you shouldn't socially alienate, you know, the real working class of America. And so at that point, I got involved with.
You think that's what George Wallace meant, or what he is presumed to have meant?
A little of both.
I don't think he meant it at all, but that's okay.
I think he was used. I definitely did mean it, in my opinion.
I think that was the use of him, because the record, I don't know, his record in Alabama is not a pro-working man's record.
That's true, yeah, that's true.
But I know what you're talking about, yeah. Though. You're talking about the counterculture not being realistic, Ray.
Right.
It being a cop-out sort of culture is what you're saying.
Well, sort of almost beside the point. I mean, it had a lot of healthy things to it, but in terms of a mixture with the politics or with the even a possible revolution, it was just isolating itself. And of course, Nixon was using that. I mean, that's where Nixon's brilliance comes from, is the ability to recognize the things and use them. I mean, maybe even help form it, you know, or the money behind him helped form it. So Nixon was using that, and he was getting across this image, it's them against us. I mean, no matter what you think of me, I'm a regular, straight American guy, and if you're not going to have me, you're going to have some hairy freak, with dope in the streets and destruction of the country, so take your choice. I mean, that's the game he played, and played very effectively. And so I mean, my feelings at that time were politically, we're trying to get some kind of working class base. And along with that was a kind of weariness from all these years of singing, and so I did a double combination, which was my gold suit trip, my greatest hits trip, which was, I mean, it started out as a joke. I mean, when I wrote my next batch of songs, and I was trying to think of an album title, and I thought, well, wouldn't it be funny if I put out greatest hits, since I never had any hits, you know, and it'll also be a spoof on the industry, because everybody keeps putting on the greatest hits and best of, you know, and repackaging their songs again and again. So I thought it would be really funny to do that, and that kind of what would be the funniest, most commercial cover I could get, and that would be, you know, suppose Phil Oakes put on a gold suit on the cover and called it Phil Oakes' Greatest Hits, so I did it as a spoof of Elvis. And of course, I've always been a big fan of Elvis, and I was analyzing why I liked Elvis so much and why I considered him so important, and I got to a feeling that he was like a combination, that he, in essence, was the most glorified working class singer, the most glorified proletarian singer that ever lived. With Colonel Parker, I mean the gold suit, and it's what was the creation of this kind of hero image that his music was based, you know, half in country and western and half in rhythm and blues, and it had combination black and white thing also, and that he represented the real sort of lumpen proletariat soul of America through his music. I mean, up to the time he went into the army before he became plasticized in Hollywood. I mean, from the beginning in Sun Records up to Fool Such as I, his last single in the army. That's who he was, and and then I wrote these general kind of songs, stuff. Like, it was very, very, very. This is a very complex record because it was like it was like a Jerry Lee Lewis kind of song, another piano song, which like My Kingdom for a Car, like Help, My Kingdom for a Horse, Escape, you know, but written from a kind of middle American point of view, so about the joy of riding in a car and how the car is the assassin of the country.
I have found my freedom. You will find me flying down a highway, gold. My shirt sleeves are rolled. My Colt 45 is cold. I go fast till I'm going faster. Look how far we've come, look how far. A car, my kingdom for a car. How I love the highway. Picks me up, it takes me wherever I please. I race through the trees, bring space to her knees. I am master of all the flying by me. Look how far we've come, look how far. A car, my kingdom for a car.
Then Jerry Lewis piano kind of stuff, yeah. You know?
So the interesting, too, at this time, influences, country and western then, and rock played an influence on you now, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I started out that way. And that, the other point of all this was that the first music I was interested in was Presley, was Hank Williams, was Lefty Frizzell, Farron Young, Webb Pierce. That was the first music I liked. And it was from there into the Kingston Trio, into folk music. But I started out that way, so it was also a return to my roots in a way, and what I consider the real, you know, the real folk music. You know, I mean the pop music of the 50s was a kind of folk music. This was before the 50s revival had taken root, and so with a song like that, and also a straight country song, I wrote wrote a very bizarre song called Gas Station Women, which is about somehow about gasoline is sperm, and something with a chorus like, fill her up with love, please won't you, mister? Just the high test is what I used to say. But that was before I lost my baby. I'll have a dollar's worth of regular today. I never should have left my home, never left the farm. But the city was exciting, I couldn't do me any harm. But the more folks that I run across, the less I seem to know. That kind of stuff, you know?